Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Mateusz. I work at Red Hat as a principal software engineer in the Kubernetes bare metal networking team. So yeah, as the title of the talk says, we'll be talking about bare metal networking. And I wanted this talk to be somehow a gentle intro into what you need to think about when you want to start doing Kubernetes on bare metal, but the things that Kubernetes doesn't tell you you should care about. So we'll see in a moment what that means, but yeah. I work at Red Hat, I already said this. I'm based in Switzerland. When I'm not doing computers, I'm doing farming. I actually like it much, much better, but it doesn't pay the bills, so I need to do the stuff that I'm going to tell you about here. Well, it is what it is. I don't do AI as opposed to, you know, all the hype and all this kind of stuff, so yeah, I'm not really on the hype wave. Bare metal was never really hyped, so, well, what can I say? Some intro why we may even think about doing containers or bare metal. Like, you know, no one ever told us to do so, so what the heck is, you know, is the deal? So HPC and, yeah, AI. This slide predates the AI hype, so sorry for this. I could have removed it. But long story short, there are some workloads which really want to benefit from running on bare metal. You may have some fancy GPU from, let's not name the company, or some network adapter, which is, you know, something that you really want to have access to the hardware directly, or the other side of the scale, something that you run and is critical to any part of the infrastructure that you already have. Like, for example, network equipment. You don't want to run a router of your own data center as an instance in AWS, right? That would be somehow, yeah, we shouldn't do this this way. Or something which is almost forgotten, and you know, then people call me and put this use case, benchmarking. How do you benchmark hardware, CPUs, and this kind of stuff, if not by running workload directly on this hardware? Again, you don't want to create 50 VMs on some CPU only to get the benchmark of this CPU performance. That would be chicken egg. Let's not do this. So now fast forward. We agree that we want to do Kubernetes, and we agree that we want to do this on bare metal. So we go to Kubernetes dot something, I don't know what that is today. We go to the, you know, FAQ, installing a cluster, and we start reading. What do I need to do to install a cluster? Is there any tooling that would help me installing this cluster? And the very first page you see is this, installing Kubernetes with deployment tools. And they tell you kubeadm and to some other tools. And we are like, oh, so lucky. There are tools that are going to do this stuff for us. Okay, let's check the first one. You go to kubeadm, and we start reading. Using kubeadm, you can create a minimum viable Kubernetes clusters. And okay, so is MVP really the production cluster that I'm going to run? Well, probably no. Let's keep that tool. The second one, we look into KOps. Okay, let's go to the website of KOps. Let's do the same. Installing Kubernetes, getting started. And we start reading. Deploying to AWS, to GCP, DigitalOcean, yada, yada, yada. None of them is deploying to bare metal. Thank you very much. End of the story. Let's check the last one. Maybe that's our chance. So we go to the Kube Spray. It's a set of Ansibles. So another story, you know. But okay, someone gives us some method to deploy Kubernetes on bare metal. So we go, run Kube Spray playbooks. With the bare metal infrastructure deployed, Kube Spray can now install Kubernetes and set up the cluster. And you start reading those playbooks and you feel like, oh, this is so opinionated. So either I want to do my data, either I want to build my data center like they want me to build, or thank you very much, there is no tool. So let's agree that none of these three methods is for us. We need to do this stuff ourselves. So let's build the stuff, you know, brick by brick from the beginning. So what we need to care about a cluster, and not only during installation, but in general to have this cluster bootstrapped and then working. First of all is, of course, this is bare metal. At the end, you want to deploy this cluster because there will be some workload, right? You want to access this workload. As well, you want to access the API, right? Basic operations. You don't deploy the cluster for the sake of deploying it and running, consuming the energy. Then, of course, DNS infrastructure. You are deploying this in your data center, And then what? Are you going to give to your customers? And now, you know, type this IP address slash something, something to look at this fancy website or application that we deployed. No, you want to have it some very nice domain and, you know. But for that, again, DNS infrastructure, you need that. It doesn't come for free. The next step is we agreed that we are doing bare metal because we have some reason to do this, and it's not like we just don't like a simple VM from AWS, which means there will be some non-standard network configuration. Doesn't really matter if fancy or not. It will be something more than just, you know, plug the server, turn it on, because in most of the cases, people doing bare metal, they don't have DHCP in all the networks, or they need some storage network, and it all requires some fine tuning, which doesn't come from default when you boot your Linux distro, and some other dirty tricks that I'm going to tell you later, because it's Kubernetes specific, and I want to build my way up to this. So, cluster load balancer, because I told you that you need to have API and ingress to your workload and all this kind of stuff. The slide is overly complicated for two reasons. The first reason is because it is complicated. The other reason is because no one ever cared to make it less complicated. I know it sounds bad, but it is what it is. So the only thing I want to tell you is that, you know, we are in this story of building a cluster, installing it from scratch, which means we are starting bootstrap from somewhere. Like, you know, you may be running those kube, ADM, create, cluster, yada, yada, from this laptop, right? So this laptop will be your initial bootstrapping infrastructure. On the other hand, at the other side of this room, I have those three servers that are going to be masters. So this somehow has to ride all together. I need to have some IP address that will be this API finally when I spawn all those nodes in the cluster. So I need to have some virtual IP which will be pointing towards this API, right? This is what I'm calling API VIP. And it sounds complex, but at the end, it boils down to one sentence. When you start doing kubectl commands at the end, you need to target some IP address. If you are deploying bare metal infrastructure, you don't want to ever target specific node, because if this node goes down, all your tooling goes down. So you want to have some virtual IP, and you may have some load balancer from well-known companies as an appliance, or you may want to just do it yourself with KeepAliveD, so I will show this in a second. And in this slide, what is then the part? So at some point, we have deployed those control plane nodes, those worker nodes, and, you know, we have the API address, which should be now pointing only to the control plane nodes, not to your bootstrap, so this laptop, you know, It goes away from this story. But then you have some other IP address because you are deploying workload. You are not only an admin now. You really have something that runs, and your applications, you don't want to expose your control plane to anyone, right? Or do you? Well, you rather not. So you need another IP, and exactly the same story. Where do you take all those IP from, and who manages them? Yeah, you manage them. So what you are doing for this, and of course, I'm telling you about some very opinionated way of designing how to install Kubernetes cluster, and it's opinionated because we decided, so let's do KeepAliveD in the combination with HAProxy. And I told you the story why we need the VIP, so you should be already convinced that, you know, if we need that, then we pick KeepAliveD because it's very simple and it's proven in action. Why do we put HAProxy in this story also? And now it will be fast forward to some specific use cases and requirements that we got. Only thing to remember is that it won't be always the same stack for API and ingress, because your admin control, you know, as an administrator of the cluster, I have usually different requirements than the user, so different tools, different purposes. Because, you know, it's very easy to simply deploy KeepAliveD and tell it, you know, let's pick this 1.2.3.4 IP and put it somewhere in the pool of these servers, right? But then Kubernetes is about being highly available. So what happens if your one node goes down? Well, the IP address should float to some other node that works, right? But what does it mean from the network perspective that IP address floats? What's going to happen with the connections that you have to this IP address? We start having this kind we start asking ourselves these kind of questions. Because we have now three servers in the control plane. Kube API server runs in three of them. We kill one Kube API server. Unlucky us, it was the one that was holding the IP of the, you know, of how we access the cluster. What happens now? No access to the cluster. So either we wait for KeepAliveD to move this IP address, ARP tables to propagate, and all this kind of stuff, or, and this is what we decided, we put HAProxy in between the Kube API server and KeepAliveD so that HAProxy, and this is something that, you know, people from Kubernetes will want to kill me, HAProxy is much more stable than Kubernetes API. That's it. That's it. If you look at the statistics, Kube API server fails much, much more than HAProxy. So this is our way to keep this. And as simple as it sounds, the problem that I want to solve is that when Kube API server dies, I don't want the IP address to float because propagating ARP tables and expiring the caches takes too long. And I just simply don't want to wait for that. So I put HAProxy there. And yeah, the only thing to remember if you really take this path is that you need to fine-tune the health checks, because then the worst you can do is that if KeepAliveD starts to notice outage faster than HAProxy, because HAProxy also balances the traffic, right? So then the order of actions is that you want Kube API server to die, which shouldn't be happening, but it happens. HAProxy notices that, and end of the story. That's it. KeepAliveD should never notice this. And of course, we may go deeper. And what happens if HAProxy dies? Well, this is now a game of statistics. Has it ever happened for us that Kube API server and HAProxy died at the same time? Well, it never happened apart if you go to the server and just plug it out from the rack. So this is some corner case that we don't want to cover, but yeah, it doesn't really really happen in the wild. Of course, there are some limitations because, you know, you can have IP address only on a single node. This is this advantage versus some appliance. The biggest problem here is that you need to have all this stuff in one single L2 segment, so in one broadcast domain. This is because KeepAliveD doesn't work across subnets. We have some ways to fix that by grouping nodes into different L2s and then having different KeepAliveDs in those L2s. But still, this is a pain point, and this is something that you should really well design on the paper if you start doing this. But, you know, enough of load balancers, because we could be talking ages about this. DNS, because we said that we want to do this DNS mumbo jumbo, and, you know, we don't want to use IP addresses only. So, of course, you are administrator, you manage the infra, you could say, but, you know, we have this DNS infrastructure there. It's maybe AWS, maybe Cloudflare, maybe something else. So we can just create records there. But then, you know, either you trust the user or you don't. And we don't. So another opinionated thing in our way of installing Kubernetes is that we spawn very minimal setup of core DNS, which will be providing the DNS resolution of what you want to all the nodes of the cluster and all the pods running in this cluster. So that when you start installation claiming that you will have API running on api.example.com, I don't worry if you already created this record on the external DNS. I'll just spawn static pod running core DNS and I will create those records myself. So whatever I'm running in this cluster will have this. This, again, protects me. Because now what happens if we decouple this? You have your external, you know, DNS like most of the people. And how do you want your cluster to behave when this DNS infrastructure goes down? You have your data center, everything is okay. In some other data center, you have DNS and this DNS is out. Do you want now your cluster to be, you know, dying because pods want to talk to each other and they cannot resolve DNS? It should be all self-contained, right? You don't want to have those external dependencies. So yeah, this is something that we are doing. And the part I will skip is that Network Manager requires some tuning, because for people knowing how containers are spawned, when you start a container, a copy of etc resolve conf is taken at the moment of starting the container and is plugged into the container, meaning that if you change configuration of your host regarding DNS, it will not be propagated to the container unless you restart the container. So yeah, for this reason, we are also hacking this file around so that it would be really updating on the fly, but I don't want to go into this. Something a bit more interesting, because we are going now into Kubernetes APIs and how to extend this stuff, is network configuration of the host. This is static configuration file for Network Manager, and probably you've seen this, and probably you've made some mistakes to this file, not once. The problem I want to state here is that this is a static file. You go, you modify it, nothing happens. You may notice mistake in this file 5 years after, because for 5 years you haven't rebooted your server, and we don't want to have this scenario in Kubernetes world. When you define some configuration, it should either apply immediately or fail immediately. So this kind of stuff that you need to do manual modifications of the file, it breaks this contract we have. And another part is it simply doesn't scale. If you have 300 servers in your bare metal cluster, you are not doing those changes manually. Simply not. You have CRDs, and this is what should be happening. Yeah, this is some very simple example. You know, I do some modification, I mistake slash for backslash. Okay, they detect that, and that's easy. But I'm configuring default gateway as an IP address from outside of my subnet, and this is, you know, this is utterly wrong, but nothing in Network Manager will prevent me from this configuration. So I simply don't want to have this. So we have this CRD defined that creates host configuration from the API. And it may sound like chicken egg, but it's all the matter of how we order the stuff. So we defined, you know, Kubernetes CRD that will be defining how you configure Network Manager on the host. You can do it per node, all this kind of stuff. I will just show you how that works very quickly. Yeah, that's the one. So I have this node, which has this IP address on the last interface 10.244.0.2. And what I want to do now, I want this to be, you know, different. I want to change that. So but I want to change it from the Kubernetes in a declarative way, so that whenever someone will be modifying this, the change will get reverted. So I just created a YAML which will configure IP address on some interface. As simple as that. And I will apply that, with the hope that it works as expected. At the top, we can see that this CR is now progressing with the configuration in progress. Well, in fact, that, yeah, that was as simple as it is. So we can see that this IP was removed. For a moment, I was thinking, you know, who's going to ask, but you already had IP in this subnet configured. So what's going to happen? Well, that configuration wouldn't fly because you should not have two IPs from the same subnet on the same interface. So yeah. So this is short demo of that. And at the same time, you know, it's Kubernetes API. It should protect us from doing stupid things. So I will try to configure a stupid DNS server which has no way of existing because it's on the link local IPv6 subnet. So if I try to apply that, something should protect me from doing this, because that would actually break the configuration. So let's see our configuration right now. Okay, so we have 111.1 as the DNS server, and let's apply this manifest now that configures the wrong DNS. Okay, the change has been applied. It's wrong. At this moment, your cluster starts to misbehave, your probes go down, and so on. But let's give it around 10-15 seconds, and this configuration should get reverted, because there is a controller which in fact checks if your modifications to the network infrastructure on the, yeah, on the host. After applying, do they make something not working as it should? In this scenario, well, we see that, you know, degraded, failed to configure. It failed because this DNS server doesn't exist in reality. Yeah, so that was just, you know, short demo of how we handle all that. It's a bunch of self-contained elements that once you start using them all together, they give you a very nice Kubernetes installer that does it all for you. Sometimes in an opinionated way, sometimes less. So now I told you that there will be some dirty tricks. So in Kubelet, there is a concept of node IP, and we are now moving to the Linux world. When you want your application in Linux world to run and interact with the network, it has to bind somewhere. And this somewhere is IP address and the port. Let's forget the port, we care about IP address. But if you have multiple network interfaces, where should Kubernetes listen? Like everywhere on one IP address, on two IP addresses. If you have 10 interfaces, what do we do? And I say that Kubernetes upstream doesn't solve it in a very smart way because it was designed to run on clouds with only one network interface. But as we started expanding, it's not something that we still want. So we developed some additional logic to check that, and I will skip the details. In general, one more problem to think about. When you configure Kubelet manually, you need to think what the IP addresses should be there. And this configuration is complicated because actually you can say bind everywhere or bind to one IP address, or you can say bind to IPv4, like as a string, IPv4, and what happens there? It's all you know. You get even stranger syntax, IPv6 as a string, comma, and then IPv4 address. And you know, all this kind of stuff, you need to understand how it behaves and pick your choice. And you know, it's complex. You may get really confused once you start listening to this. So we have some set of rules, doesn't really, you know, I will skip them. You can go back to this. But in general, some corner cases, so you know, I just showed you an example in which you shouldn't have multiple IP addresses in one subnet. But what if you do? There are some people who do this for a reason, and you know, how do you want Kubelet to behave then? And also one example that I have, and this is just mind-blowing, it killed me for like 2 weeks. Is your IPv6 address really an IPv6 address? So, okay, this slide I skip. So I got to this RFC which describes IPv4 compatible IPv6 addresses. And I was like, what the heck is that? So let's go to all the libraries in all the known programming languages. Every of them has a function, is an IP address, IPv6 address. You go to implementation, how implementation looks like. If string contains colon, return true. Thank you very much, game over. It's as simple as that. And really, for the last 30 years of my life, I thought this is as simple as it is, but it's not. Let's take this. So comma, comma, four times F, then comma, sorry, colon, and then we put IP address with dots. It is a correct address. There is RFC for this address. It may look stupid, but it's a well-defined address. And, you know, it breaks. Try opening a netcat socket to listen on this address. It will not work because half of the tools now think this is IPv6 address. Half of the tools think this is IPv4 address. I did strace on that. And what I realized is that based on this address, it was trying to open a socket on a simple IPv4 address. And you know, at this moment, how should we treat that? So, you know, and this is the real case scenario. I got it from a customer who was trying to install Kubernetes, and they wanted to use this subnet. And I was like, what is that? And you know, then we dig deeper and we realize that this is a monster. It should have never existed, but apparently it exists. And you know, if you find a set of parameters that you pass to netcat and it crashes, then something went wrong. So in the end, yeah, choose wisely what you want to do. And once you design your infrastructure, really, you know, double check it with someone out there with upstream community. Is it really how you should be doing stuff? Because in a lot of cases you realize that something misbehaves, and you know, and that was, yeah, one more thing. You think everything is okay, then you start Kubelet and Kubelet tell you, oh sorry, but you know, in fact with this cloud provider you can you cannot use this syntax, and then you realize, oh, I wanted to do dual stack but I cannot because Kubelet tells me that I cannot. So you know, and you realize it only at the end of the story once you spent weeks on designing. So that's it.